The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue is expected to ask Cabinet to lift the pay restrictions on senior bankers and the return of the banker's bonus. Now, you wonder, is this move a necessity to attract talented staff over a decade on from the financial crash, or is Pascal's parting gift to the sector a little tone deaf given the current cost of living crisis? I'm joined now by Sinn Féin TD for Donegal, the party's finance spokesperson, Piers Doherty, and by Professor Stephen Kinsler, head of the Department of Economics at the University of Limerick and chief economics writer at The Currency. You're both very welcome. Piers Doherty, first of all, your reaction to this potential decision?
Yes, Pat, I think it is tone deaf. I think it is a kick in the teeth to struggling households and workers. I think it comes in the year in which AIB and Bank of Ireland have had the record-breaking fines issued against them for their activities, not just historic activities in terms of the tracker mortgage scandal, but in the context of AIB, the central bank tells us that the breaches and impact on customers lasted right up until March of this year, just a handful of months ago. And we know the impact of that scandal, 40,000 customers having hundreds of millions of euro overcharged, loss of properties, nearly 100 family homes being lost, and the parting gift from the Minister for Finance is to tell the executives in AIB and Permanent TSB, despite what happened over the last years, is that we're going to lift the pay cap, and you know there's going to be an unlimited amount that your board can sanction you to pay senior executives in the future. And I think that is completely and utterly wrong. Okay. You don't reward bad behaviour. And I agreed with the point that Pascal Donoghue made over and over again, that remuneration in the banking sector has to be linked to accountability, to public confidence, and to a change of culture. And I would argue, given what we learned from the central bank this year in terms of the tracker mortgage scandal, that none of that has changed in the way that it needs to.
Stephen, what is your take on this? I mean, is this a change in payment regimes to get the right people? We can quote, you know, the case of Francesca McDonough, who left and went to a bank with a much higher salary, even though her position in the pecking order would have been lower. Do you need to pay more to get people who can run a small Irish bank?
Well, I think the research shows that in general, when it comes to CEO pay and higher level executive pay, it doesn't necessarily matter how much you pay them. It matters how you pay them. And in this case, you know, adding in bonuses into a banking sector which is becoming markedly less competitive, particularly in the case of the almost duopoly that we're going to see between Bank of Ireland and AIB, seems a little counterproductive. I would also suggest that these banks are not actually particularly profitable by international standards, and so therefore the logic for altering the current situation seems a little bit flawed in my view.
Okay, so there's no great logic there. Why do you think, therefore, the minister might be recommending this course of action? Is it simply, you know, a philosophical thing? We really don't want to be messing with the market?
Well, we intervene in the banking sector in loads of different ways. It's a highly regulated sector because it's so important. And, you know, I think the basic idea here is, in general, one should not be capping the pay of, you know, relatively privately owned sectors. And while philosophically I would tend to agree with that, the reality of the situation is that you know, one of these banks is still heavily state owned. Another, you know, they were all bailed out by the state over a decade ago now. Pierce has already talked about some of the legacy issues that are still being worked out. I really have to say that you know, if the argument is we need to help bank workers that are struggling, you know, with bonuses up to say 20,000 or something like that, that's a different argument to we need to recruit the absolutely tip top CEOs, to, you know, who will, whatever way you want to cut it, will ultimately face a less competitive environment than their predecessors.
Okay, so here's in summary what you're saying about the bonuses. If the bonuses, and I'm trying to tease this out, if they're properly structured, in other words, if they are a reward for transparent performance, so be it. But if it's just another way of tossing money at people that's a different matter.
Yeah, or another way of thinking about it is, do you really need bonuses? I mean, you can have share vesting, you can employ share options, you can do loads of different things that align the interests of the worker with the interests of the business. It doesn't necessarily have to be a cash payment every March. That actually introduces, and again, the research is very clear on this, the kind of bonus behavior. It incentivizes all kinds of weird behaviors within the business itself.
Okay, so for example, going back to Celtic Tiger, Stephen, if you were being rewarded by a bonus, depending on the amount of lending that you did,
exactly.
If you were in the lending department, and they were throwing money at developers, and earlier in the program we were talking about defective building of apartment blocks and so on, because such was the rush to get them up and flog them. If you were rewarding that kind of behaviour, that might not be appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, here basic economics teaches you that if you create the incentives, you'll create the behavior. And I think you want to think very, very carefully about incentives that you're building in, because people respond to them. And once they respond to them, then you can't really you don't really have much of a comeback later on. Similarly, if there's incentives for good behavior, or if there are disincentives for bad behavior and they're very strong, guess what you'll get? Good behavior and bad behavior.
So, Pierce, Stephen is at one, unless, of course, the bonus might be appropriately given for example, if some guy or gal in the bank saves me €1 million a year in, maybe cutting down energy costs or making things more efficient or whatever, they might well deserve a bonus for making me, as bank owner, a lot of money.
Yeah, we know the history, obviously, of banks. We know, before these restrictions were put in place, CEOs of banks were getting bonuses close to €2 million. That's the reality of it. The risk that we know that it was associated with the risky behaviour. We've been lobbied by banks, by CEOs. I have been personally by the lobby group on behalf of banks. And they haven't talked about energy efficiency or any of that. In fairness, Pat, they're talking about rewarding those at senior level and be able to recruit. And now there isn't.
So that is the rationale they offer you. We can't get good people. We are paying peanuts. We get monkeys. They're describing themselves as monkeys, basically.
Well, they've argued for the cap to be gone and so on. And €500,000 isn't a small amount of money. The central bank has made it very clear in a letter to the minister back in 2019 that the cap they believed was appropriate, that people aren't just motivated by pay, and that we haven't had an issue in terms of filling the most senior positions within our bank. So there is a real question as to why Pascal, Mr. Donoghue, on his part, he gets to the banking industry, is allowing for unlimited pay in the future for these individuals. And we will continue to own a portion of this bank. So therefore, the state, the taxpayer, will be contributing to this level of pay. And I think it is unwarranted. As I said, it's completely the wrong time. And what we need is a culture change within the bank. We need a complete culture change. It's not happening. And therefore, what you don't do is you don't reward bad behaviour.
Yeah. So with the central bank, Pierce, just in fairness, and we were talking about the defective apartments earlier, the sins of the past. Now, some developers who are responsible for those blocks are out building again with no sanction from government and no way to sanction them for their past sins. The bankers might argue, listen, the people who made those crazy decisions back in the Celtic Tiger era are gone. Now, they may be enjoying lavish pensions, but they don't work for the banks anymore. So, should we be punished? It's like, if you were to form a government the next time, to blame a Sinn Féin-led government for the sins of a previous government, you'd be jumping up and down.
I agree with your point, Pat, and that's why I'm not holding the existing bankers to account in relation to what happened in terms of the reckless lending during the crash or previous to the crash. But what I will draw people's attention to is the central bank report in terms of the tracker mortgage scandal, an investigation that began from the central bank in 2015. And right through that process, the central bank found time and time again against the bank that the banks didn't stop the harm, that they continued the harm, that they repossessed family homes during this period. And indeed, in terms of AIB, this is they continue to impact their customers adversely right up until March of this year. This isn't an historic issue. This is the current boards of the bank that have been found in breaches of regulations during the investigation period itself. So I'm saying very clearly there is an issue in terms of the culture within our bank. And you do not reward bad behaviour. It makes no sense to me in relation to Pascal Donoghue deciding that 500,000 isn't enough in the future for, for senior bankers and to allow unlimited. Now, look, we know where the minister wants to go. We know where his ideology in this is. He wants to allow banks to go back to where they were in terms of the state not having an involvement either in shareholding or in restrictions of pay. I would actually argue that that is the wrong thing. We need to.
You think we should hang on to as much of AIB as we can?
Yeah, I've been very clear in relation to this here. I actually think we should have a majority shareholding in AIB. I think that not because of direct in AIB, but because of our influence in terms of AIB, you're able to influence that bank, which has a knock-on effect in terms of others. For example, if it wasn't for the shareholding that we had in AIB, AIB's cashless banks would have happened at this point in time.
Okay, Stephen,
that was reversed because we have a shareholding.
Stephen, what do you think the state should rather hang on to a bit of AIB as a majority shareholding, says Pierce, if possible, in order to influence the banking culture within that organisation?
Well, in addition to being a majority shareholder, the government through the central bank is also the regulator of those banks, so it can influence the banks in that way too. As a shareholder, weirdly, again, that if you know you put in the incentives, you get the behavior. As a shareholder, and if the taxpayer is a shareholder, we actually want the bank to make as much money as possible, so it remits us the biggest dividend possible. So in that sense, having people who have the ability to make the bank lots of money, and therefore the shareholders, us, more money might be a good thing. But I'm going back to the you build the incentive, you get the behavior. But going back to something that is really important. If you know, I have no particular objection with bonuses in theory. In practice, they build in loads of weird behaviors that you would want to tend to avoid. I really, really do think though that more consideration needs to be given to the actual mechanics of this, as opposed to the theoretical or perhaps ideological.
Okay, so if it truly is doing well for the bank, for the shareholders, for the customers, perhaps a bonus might be merited. Are you setting your face entirely against bonuses, Pierce?
I think that now is not the right time. I do think that there's an issue in terms of low pay within banks. Now, some of this will be tried to be spun today as that, you know, this is about the tellers within banks. And as I said, in all the lobbying that I've gone through, from the CEOs of the banks to the representative body, they're not talking about tellers. Let me make that clear. But there is an issue there in terms of the fact that additional remuneration can be given to them. So, for example, childcare can be supported, or indeed you need the consent of the minister for cost of living payments. Now, Bank of Ireland and AIB paid out to the majority of its staff €1,000 cost of living payments earlier this year. That received the consent of the minister. So there is mechanisms to be able to do this.
But
that isn't what we're talking about here. That isn't what we're talking about here. That isn't what the decision of the government is about.
When your politicians of all hues give out about this, you know, all we have to do is look at what politicians enjoy. You know, even the people who live within the Dublin area get €9,000 a year tax-free walking around money. Do you know, and that would be the equivalent of the after-tax €20,000 bonus to bankers. And, you know, it's, and some people, I was looking at a report which came to us from the Parliamentary Standard Allowance end of year report for 2021. I mean, some TDs got over €50,000 in unvouched expenses.
Well, we're very clear in relation to this here that all expenses should be vouched, both your travel and subsistence expenses and your office expenses. So your office expenses are completely vouched. Your travel and subsistence are based on the number of days that you attend.
You have to to get the unvouched, you have to attend for 120 days.
Yes.
But, I mean, you say you're against it. But I mean, Rose Conway-Walsh, one of your TDs, got €53,000 in unvouched expenses, you know?
Well, I'm not sure that in relation to those figures, because I think you're actually rolling in the office expense, which is completely vouched, and then the other expense, which is travel and accommodation, which you have to turn up to Leinster House, and if you don't, you have to pay. Let me make this clear here as well. So a banker who actually has to travel to work or go down the country to meet will also be able to put in his or her voucher expenses. That isn't, you're not drawing comparisons with each other. What this is about, bankers' bonuses being reintroduced. What this is about, unlimited caps for AIB and PTSB, of which we own the majority shareholding in both those banks. At a, you know, so the idea is that the state would be contributing to the salary, which already is set at the, you know, at a level that is very high, €500,000, and there is no reason, in my view, for that to be increased at this point in time. Yeah.
Final point: one of the listeners says we should stop paying USC if the banks are going to get bonuses. Now, the two are not necessarily comparable. But USC was a temporary little tax that is now a permanent tax. Would you, as a finance minister, potentially, would you abolish the USC?
No, we made it very, very clear at the time when Pascal Donoghue was standing for photo shoot saying that he was going to abolish the USC. We told him that it was populist. We said it was reckless. We said that Fine Gael wouldn't be able to do it because it brings in €500 million per annum, and rightly, it turns out that they did a major U-turn. Now, they suggested that then they were going to absorb it into PRSI. They've U-turned on that as well. And I don't know what the latest articulation of their tax policy is. But we've always made it clear that that would be populist. What we want to do is reduce the burden on USC, particularly in low and middle income earners.
Yeah, but the USC, the USC was a tax that was going to get a little bit from everybody. That was the whole idea of that tax. And gradually that's been eroded. So if you have a very low income, you pay a tiny amount of USC, but you do contribute. And then if you're a really high roller, you pay off the top. Before your tax is calculated, you pay the USC. So it's a very good tax, very progressive tax. The more you earn, the more you pay, and you pay in spades. You can't be disallowing this and disallowing that before you pay it. You just pay it. And yet there is a constant erosion of that base. And it kind of defies the logic of the original setting up of the USC.
Well, it defies the logic if you believe with the logic that, you know, that people is earning as low as €4,000 should pay the tax. That's what it was.
But suppose they pay a tenner a year, you know, they have a feeling, rightly or wrongly, that they're contributing, and no one can point the finger at them.
But first of all, nobody should be pointing the finger at somebody who's earning €4,000 a year, Pat, in my view, because they are contributing. Because every time they walk into the shop and buy a carton of milk, they're paying VAT. Every time they put clothes on their back, they're paying VAT. They are contributing in terms of tax. The question is, should we apply an income-linked tax at very, very low levels?
Yeah, but the U stands for universal. And it no longer does. Anyway, look, I will leave that there. Stephen, do you have a comment to make on the USC and not paying it because it was there for the bankers to bail them out?
Well, it wasn't there for the bankers to bail them out. It was actually there to bail out the entire public sector, which was deeply in deficit at the time. I think taxes like that are really good. I think that we haven't had a mature conversation as a country about the level of taxation we're going to have going forward. We've got an aging population, we've got climate change, we've got migration. The state is going to have to get bigger. We're going to have to figure out ways to pay for that. So far, we haven't really had a long conversation about that. The Commission on Taxation and Welfare's report, 560 pages long, dismissed by the Taoiseach with a two-sentence rebuttal that just basically said no. These kind of things are not a good way to run a society. The reality is the state is going to have to get bigger over the next 30 years. Somebody's going to have to pay for it. And, it, you know, expecting the top 20% of people, 20% of income earners to pay the lion's share is a recipe for a disaster. We're going to have to find other measures. And, you know, this is not a question of ideology, Pat. It's not a question of measure. It's a question of arithmetic. We all want the state to get bigger. People want tax. People want more education. They want more healthcare. We're going to have to pay for an older population.
Pay for summer.
And it's going to have to get paid for.
Professor Stephen Kinsella, head of the Department of Economics at University of Limerick, and before that, Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin TD for Donegal, the party's finance spokesperson. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance,
weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.